Good morning and welcome to Animal Voices here on CIUT 89.5 FM. It is looking like it's going to be a beautiful day here in Toronto, which is fitting our celebratory interview we have with Dr. Erica Sullivan coming up in just a few minutes. Recorded at the end of a very long day for Dr. Sullivan, we caught up with her on Sunday to discuss her recent victory in her campaign to end terminal surgeries at the Ontario Veterinary College in Guelph, Ontario. Loyal listeners will recall we talked with Erica back in 2008 when she was just beginning this campaign, and right around this time last year, we played a lecture she gave here in Toronto regarding her experiences providing veterinary care for elephants in Thailand. You can check out that talk and her former interview, along with 300 other shows, on our archive at www.animalvoices.ca. You can also write us, of course, as we love to hear from our listeners, if you have comments, questions, or just want to say hi, at animalvoices@gmail.com. Of course, we're on Facebook as well, and you can check us out there. We do have a rather long interview to get to, but I have a couple quick announcements here from some upcoming events in the Toronto area. First, from Bob Timmons, Artist for the Ocean, and Hamilton Chapter Leader of Ocean Activists United, who is assisting in coordinating two mass gatherings, one in Miami and one right here in Toronto, coming up on Sunday, April 3rd. He writes, "This mass gathering is an international presence against animal captivity worldwide. We are making this an old-school grassroots campaign where no organizations are affiliated with the event, strictly passionate people for positive change. Toronto will be having one on the same day as well at the Dundas Square from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., and you can contact Brenda LaFleche, that's LaFleshe, at gmail.com. And anyone who is listening who would like to be a part of creating a mass gathering of their own or in traveling down to Miami with Bob can contact him at artistfortheocean@gmail.com. The Miami organizers write, "We have chosen the Miami Seaquarium because of their star orca named Lolita from the L Pod of Puget Sound, Washington. She was removed from the ocean when she was 6 years old back in 1970. Tim Gorski's movie, Lolita, Slave to Entertainment, tells more about her story. Lolita is our icon of captivity, and because of our protests over the last couple years, she is internationally known. Currently, there are 54 animals trapped in the Miami Seaquarium, from seals, dolphins, alligators, sea turtles, and manatees, to name a few. We want anyone and everyone to fly, drive, or bus into Miami for April 3rd. That's coming up in just a few Sundays from now. The initial protest will run from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. and will be followed by a series of speakers, including ex-Marine trainers and some bands, possibly right beside the Marine prison. It's time to come together as a mass gathering for change." Second, from Lisa Albert, who's been organizing an upcoming two-week-long event, she writes, "Veggielicious is a new annual event from the Toronto Vegetarian Association. Restaurants in Toronto and in surrounding areas as far away as St. Catharines will be offering deals on special vegan meals from April 9th to the 24th. Go to veggielicious.ca to find a list of participating restaurants and special menus, interactive maps, and to learn how you can win a prize pack from Guardian." I'm going to post that link up on our Facebook group while I'm playing the interview of the second half of the show here. That is it for our announcements today. Stay tuned for our interview with Erica Sullivan coming up in just a few minutes. But first, as always, we turn now to Kevin Tillman of the Vegan Hip Hop Movement for yet another installment of his continuing segment here on Animal Voices. Stay tuned.
Greetings, Animal Voices. It's Kevin from the Vegan Hip Hop Movement. This week's soundscape comes from Seoul-born Tim Holland, who is an alternative hip-hop artist and a co-founder of the Anticon Collective. Seoul is known for his dense, often dark, stream-of-consciousness writing style. His verses are often filled with abstraction, metaphor, and sarcasm, while avoiding or deconstructing traditional hip-hop topics. You can learn more about Seoul and other vegan hip-hop artists on the Vegan Hip-Hop Movement Blogspot, Facebook, and MySpace pages. And now off of Seoul's Live from Rome album, here is the song Theme.
Oh, Refined sugar is white, cause it's processed through bone. In 5 years, all the meat you eat will be cloned. Whether you like it or not, someone in China died for what you own. As long as 1% control the money, water, and throne. Overweight fathers wonder why children stay stoned in $100,000 homes, or cause the breakdown when you pay off the loan. While rotten pilgrims wrestle in their graves, choking each other out on who gets to keep the loan. Got syringes on beaches covered in layers of toxic foam. Millions will die for oil and alternatives are known. Meanwhile, mothers learn to argue with their daughters and Jenny Jones. You give them 40 hours a week, time's the only thing you own. You spend 8 hours working, other 6 on the phone. Thinking it's bad to masturbate, but it's worse to be alone. And at that point, you might think everything you know is wrong. While the news says stay scared, old women stay home. Little girls get birth control pills, boys get G.I. Joes. It's effeminate to be sensitive, so strive to be Capone. As long as you go to heaven, it's okay to be a drone. Drink another animal's milk, it'll give you strong bones. The emperor plies evil with stereotypical racist tones. Kids grow up with attention deficit disorder, cause intelligent people get hyperactive in radioactive zones. We're understimulated, so the child gets sent home. Now the social worker recommends a head examination. Father got health benefits, cause safety's a concern. But the shrink gets kickbacks from pharmaceutical firms. Baby's mind has turned to mush, and now we'll never write a poem. Every 5 minutes another multitasker is born, with its eyes glazed over, staring out into its new tomb. Ready to join the workplace, cause the child's a unit strong. $500 a week, then give a third to the throne. There'll be no records or ticket stubs when voting goes electronic. The only thing democratic is the pick who we bomb. While bombs are dumb, we could have bombed Ariel Sharon. Too many kids are reading, so they bombed the Terror Dome. CNN plays the fiddle while America burns. Just play the hair but screaming, play the hair but screaming, play the hair but screaming. Live from Rome, ain't nothing wrong. Bags under my eyes because the tears need home. Live from Rome, ain't nothing wrong. Bags under my eyes because our tears need home. Live from Rome, ain't nothing wrong. Bags under my eyes because our tears need home. Live from Rome, ain't nothing wrong. Bags under my eyes because our tears need home. Live from Rome, ain't nothing wrong. Bags under my eyes because our tears need home. Live from Rome, ain't nothing wrong. Bags under my eyes because our tears need home. Live from Rome, ain't nothing wrong. Bags under my eyes because our tears need homes.
Welcome back to Animal Voices here on CIUT 89.5 FM. We're joined today by Dr. Erica Sullivan, who is no doubt celebrating her recent victory in a campaign to replace terminal surgeries at the Ontario Veterinary College in Guelph, Ontario. We last spoke with Dr. Sullivan back in 2008 when she was just kicking off this campaign, going into the classroom and speaking with students about humane alternative stream for surgery training. With the news that the OVC will be working toward replacing terminal surgeries, we thought we'd catch up with Dr. Sullivan to get her perspective on the announcement of these changes and to congratulate her. So welcome to the show, Erica.
Thank you for having me.
First off, congratulations. My co-host, Lauren Corman, who interviewed you back in CIUT's old Studio 2 back in 2008, sends her regards and her congratulations. I think she speaks for all of us in the animal rights community when she says she's happy and proud of your accomplishments. So, kudos.
Thank you, Lauren.
Some of our listeners who haven't listened to the show we did back in 2008 probably don't know what your experience was like at the OVC. Could you go over that for us, and maybe what influenced you to launch this campaign in the first place?
Sure. I graduated in 2005, and to become a veterinarian, the program is a 4-year Doctor of Veterinary Medicine program at the Ontario Veterinary College in Guelph. You have to complete the 4 years, and in your third year of training, that's when student veterinarians learn how to basically perform surgery. In doing that, you're given an option in your second year, at the end of the year, you're given the option to choose whether you're going to participate in third year in what they termed then the traditional stream, meaning you would use live animals. So live animals are anesthetized each week, and in one semester these live animals are sheep, and in one semester, in the second semester, these live animals are dogs. Each week the students would anesthetize the animals, practice a surgery, everything from applying a cast to like a mimicked fractured leg, to removing an eye, to removing a spleen. And then these animals were not recovered, and instead they were euthanized on the table before the lab ended. The second option was for students to participate in the alternative program, as it was termed then. The alternative program meant that no live animals were used, and any live animals that were used in training benefited from the surgery. So this is the stream that I chose to participate in. So each week, alongside in the same room as my classmates, my surgical partner, Dr. Nicholas Bachon, and I would receive ethical cadavers. An ethical cadaver was a cadaver that was obtained either from the Guelph Humane Society with respect to the dogs, or they were a sheep cadaver that we had to thaw that had been used in previous years and was placed in a freezer. We would thaw the cadaver and practice the same procedures as our classmates in the traditional stream were doing, but on those animals. The purpose of this being no animals were harmed or killed for the purpose of our surgical training. And then we received additional weeks in our final year of vet school on live animals. And these live animals were obtained from the Oakville Humane Society. And basically, the live procedures that we were performing on these animals were necessary procedures. So we would spay and neuter live cats and dogs, which were then recovered. They benefited from the surgery. They went back to the Oakville Humane Society and were then adopted out, hopefully into loving homes.
It seems almost sort of like a community service kind of learning as well, because they're getting something out of it, and you're sort of giving back to the humane societies that are donating these animals too, right?
Exactly. All parties certainly benefit.
You mentioned back in that interview as well, and I was hoping you could speak to it again, that you felt that this training, the alternative stream, actually prepared you better for your job. Can you explain that maybe for our listeners?
I certainly argue that indeed that is the case. Like I mentioned, each lab was approximately 3 to 4 hours in length. Now, in the traditional stream, the students were also getting anesthesia practice because we all showed up at the same time. To anesthetize an animal, it involves calculating and administering a sedative anesthetic. That takes about 30 minutes on average to take effect. And then these animals were induced under general anesthesia, so a tube was placed into the trachea to render them unconscious to an anesthetic plane. So there was experience involved in the anesthesia, which I later received again in final year on hospitalized patients in the veterinary teaching hospital. So we all got the equivalent in anesthesia. Now, in terms of being in third year, back in third year doing the alternative program, Dr. Bachon and I had all of this extra hour and a bit without the anesthesia, because our specimens at that point were cadavers. That gave us time to practice additional procedures. So we would perform we would practice the anesthetic procedures even though our cadaver was dead. So we would still open the mouth, use a laryngoscope, look at the trachea, practice putting a tube into that patient, taking a fraction of the time. We then would perform the procedure for the week. So if the procedure that week was to remove the spleen of the dog, we would practice removing the spleen of the dog. Nick and I, because we were in a group of two students, we always got to assist. We took turns each week, whereas the previous students were in a group of three, so one person in their group was not even able to watch or participate in that surgery. Because, again, of that extra time savings for the anesthesia, we could have left after our required task was performed, but we chose not to. We wanted to get the absolute most experience we could to become the best veterinarians. So at the end of the lab, many of our patients, or our cadaver patients, were intact animals, meaning they hadn't been spayed or neutered, and so we would practice spaying and neutering. If there were any procedures that we thought were useful for clinical practice when we graduated, such as putting an emergency tube into an animal that comes in not breathing, we would practice it on our cadavers. If there was anything of interesting detail about our cadavers, such as they had a skin growth, or we would even almost make up a condition. Like, I remember some of our cat cadavers, I always wanted to practice removing, you know, potential thyroid masses, as some cats can get a thyroid mass. We would sort of mimic that procedure, study the surgery, and perform it on our cadavers. So essentially, we were getting at least two, if not three, surgical procedures out of that patient and out of the same time. And when you're learning surgery, most of the work, I mean, we can all read a book, we can all follow the steps. You know, it's easy to learn the procedure in a step-by-step fashion out of the textbook. What you don't know is how to hold your instruments, how to tie suture knots, how to get comfortable with bleeding. And you might say, well, you had cadavers, how did they bleed? Well, believe it or not, these cadavers are preserved. The ones that were thawed were imbibed with water. And when you cut a vessel, like a blood vessel, whether your patient's alive or not, it still bleeds. You still appreciate that you've cut the vessel because you'll get this gush of blood. Now, ours obviously didn't have blood pressure to sort of squirt in our face with that effect. However, we took it to the same extent. We were not taking this lightly. This was the same experience for us. And if anything, we wanted to maximize every ounce of that. So if we cut that cadaver's vessel and we saw a little gush of blood, even though it stopped there, we would still tackle that the same way we would if it were pumping more profusely with an animal that was alive still with active blood pressure. So I felt much more confident by the time we got to the live animals that I was holding the instruments right, that I knew how to tie my knots, and that I knew what I was doing for that planned procedure. Day to day, you know, now practicing veterinary medicine for almost 6 years, you never know what's going to happen. That patient that you think is going to be a routine neuter, you know, maybe they have a clotting defect. That patient you think you're going to be doing a routine spay on, maybe they're missing an ovary. Maybe they're the one in 10,000 animals that was born with a genetic defect. So I felt much more prepared for the unprepared. And I was also fortunate and also actively sought an externship. Between third year and fourth year vet school, all students need to have a placement in a clinic, a day-to-day clinic. And I was fortunate that at my placement, I did my placement in Uxbridge, and I coordinated with their local shelter and was able to perform all of their local spays and neuters, both at a reduced cost for them and, again, providing me with additional experience. So by the time I got to live animals, I felt much more confident graduating, you know, practicing. So if you were my first client as a new graduate veterinarian, I felt completely confident that I had performed these procedures. I knew how to deal with blood. I knew how to deal with surgery, and confident that I could do this the way any experienced veterinarian now 5-6 years later could.
That's great. I think that covers a lot of what you guys talked about last time. I wanted to get into talking about the campaign. Last time we spoke with you, of course, you were just starting this campaign. And I guess I was wondering what got you to want to start this campaign. Maybe that's rehashing some of what you talked about before, but how did you get started and what tactics were you using to try to convince the OVC to eliminate terminal surgeries?
Well, the alternative program, when it was my turn to sort of enter that stage of vet school, the alternative program had already been offered for years prior, up to almost 10 years prior. And in speaking with, you know, fellow veterinarians that had already graduated in the past, numbers of students that had participated in the alternative program were anywhere from 10 to 20 to even 30. This is always out of approximately 100 students, because every year each class is about 100 students in total. Now, when it came to our year to choose in second year, it's unfortunate because students are given the option in second year. And in second year, when they bring this up to you, you don't really know what to expect. You're not really thinking about third year in surgery. If anything, it's the end of the year. You're studying for final exams and you're overwhelmed by all of the, you know, day-to-day, I guess, stresses of having to learn large quantities of material. You know, some students were more concerned about who were going to be their surgical partners. Were they going to be with their friends or not? It really goes down to such silly issues as that. I was friends with Dr. Nicholas Bechon, but sadly, he was one of the only people that had sort of guaranteed that that was going to be their only option. There were other students that were sort of interested and sort of waffled, you know, again, always wondering, am I going to get the experience? Am I going to get the experience? Because the influence, other people's comments, other people's opinions, and really, you don't have the experience. So you're overwhelmed. We all want to be the best vets we can. And I think there's that fear that you're not going to get the experience or become a good vet, especially when it comes to surgical experience. Nick and I, we still had those same fears as everyone else, but we stuck to what was true to us and true to the fact that we knew we'd get the extra experience. It just may take, you know, it may be a year later. We did all the anesthesia in our final year, and we had to feel confident that, you know what, students have been doing this year after year. There's colleges in Europe and Australia that only offer this to students, so it is a viable option. So this is the route we took. Unfortunately, we were the only two in our class out of 100 or 100 up to 105 that participated in this program. And it concerned me because we would be in the same room as the rest of our classmates. Some of our other classmates that had considered it but chose not to in the end would be very upset at the end of each lab. We'd all be in the change room together at the end of the lab or the beginning of the lab. Some of them would be so upset, you know, week to week that they'd be crying after each lab, feeling horrible that this dog that they just had to care for all week, you know, was going to be another sort of subject for their learning. And, you know, they take great pride, I think, in those animals, and they were very respectful to those animals, but it still was hard for them to look this animal in the eye, care for it all week, and euthanize it. There were some that even midway through or not even into the semester would clearly say to me, I wish I had chosen otherwise. I wish I was doing your stream. I didn't realize how hard this was going to be, both emotionally and physically. So as time went on, I went into my final year, and I heard that the class behind us, so the graduating class of 2006, that was the first class since the program was even offered to not have any students in the stream. And right away, I thought of all of those students in my class that said to me, you know what, I wish I had chosen differently now that I'm here, now that I know what everything entails. I wish I knew now what I knew then, or I would have chosen differently. So when I saw or heard that there were zero students for the first time, I thought, you know what, it's not that there aren't any students in that class that really would want to be doing this. I think that there's misconceptions, all those fears, there's peer pressure. And I'm not going to lie, my perception was, is faculty wasn't promoting it. It was like something on the side, You can show up to this talk if you want to hear more about it, and you're going to have all this extra work to do. That was the general impression in second year when you don't know what to expect. So my general impression was it wasn't overtly welcoming to students to want to choose it or to have to choose it. And again, at a busy and stressful time, they saw it as extra work and as being an outsider in the class, labeled an outsider. So I thought, you know what, there's something wrong here. This is wrong. There's zero students for the first time for the wrong reason. So I thought, if everyone truly knows what they're in for, what to expect, and clearly can understand that they can get the same, if not more, experience from this program without harming any animals and while staying true to their own belief systems, that's all I ask, is that they're truly educated when they're making that decision. So I started actually in my fourth year vet school, albeit being a little nervous about doing it. I started emailing students from everyone from first year. I thought, I want everyone to even know what they're going to have to expect from the first year, let alone the second year, to when they have to make that decision for third year. So I started talking, sending around emails, and setting up my own talks. I made my own PowerPoint presentation. I had Nicholas join myself to answer any questions as well. I felt it was important he was there both as my surgical partner but also as a male, because the veterinary profession is 80 to 90% female to 10 to 20% male nowadays in terms of graduating. And I wasn't sure if that was playing a role for those fewer men in our class that were maybe considering it, but maybe, you know, felt it wasn't sort of the more macho option or something, again, that they would be frowned upon. So I started giving these talks, and the following year we had a complete bounce back. I think there was something like 13 the year after, definitely in the teens, so a big jump from zero. And I continued to go back year after year, even though I'd graduated, to act as a representative for that alternative stream so that people could ask questions, and I felt that they were being told all of the information. You know, the truth about where these animals came from, and to really put it in their minds, do you realize that you're going to have to care for this animal? So I guess I should go into where are the animals obtained from. Well, the dogs, they obtain from pounds. And the reason why I got my cadavers from a humane society and the live dogs in the traditional stream were obtained from pounds is because there's different legislation over those animals in Ontario. The Humane Society would never euthanize an animal or send a live animal to me to be euthanized or really to do whatever I want with under their legislation. In terms of the pound animals, they're under the Animals for Research Act in Ontario. And a pound animal, after 72 hours, so say a dog arrives to someone that's licensed as a pound, and you could be a pound, I could be a pound, we would just have to apply for this pound license and prove that, you know, we can meet the criteria that that entails, which is providing shelter and food and water. Well, legally as a pound, you have 72 hours to look for that owner. And after a minimum of 72 hours has passed, you could keep looking. You could keep that animal there. It's going to cost you, you know, money to keep it there and house it there and the food and water and any other sort of costs incurred. Or you can sell it under the Animals for Research Act to a lab or a facility to be used in whichever way they choose to use it in after you've sold it. So there's also financial incentive for you in some ways, although I don't believe most pounds truly get rid of them for financial reasons. So those animals were pound animals. So sometimes our classmates, again, and this was some of the surprises that my classmates were experiencing, sometimes they would get a golden retriever that would sit and shake a paw, so clearly someone's pet at some point, and this was their subject to then practice on and euthanize. And they weren't allowed to recover it. Some of them would even say, can I please, please, please wake it up and I'll adopt it. And it was against sort of the rules of the program. So that was the most disheartening part. I wanted everyone to know that. I wanted these upcoming students to know, are you okay with doing that? And do you agree with that? And if so, and you're still that concerned with it being live tissue or not, even though you really only get hands-on practice for like three of those animals when you can divvy up the number of labs in your groups of three, then that's fine. That's their decision. It's no different a decision as to, you know, what people eat on a day-to-day basis and how you choose to live your life in terms of just ethical principles in general about recycling or the day-to-day things we do. And when I did that, I think I brought a lot of the issues that were maybe more hushed on the side in typical staff presentations to sort of being more in your face and blunt about it. Again, not even to necessarily deter people away from it, but just so that they were making an educated decision, because it disheartened me that there were people in my class that wished they had chosen differently because they felt they weren't fully prepared or educated as to what those decisions were going to be. So that was the driving force for me giving those talks, not to convert it 100%, but hoping that people would choose 100% based on an educated decision. And those that didn't, that's great. Maybe that was the right decision for them at the time.
So you went into the classroom and you spoke with the students. You also did sort of a public relations campaign as well through the newspaper, and you collaborated as well with Animal Alliance of Canada. Can you talk about maybe how that alliance, that collaboration came about?
Sure. So I started doing, like you said, on my own. I was giving these talks, and I was trying to educate people in Toronto and other animal advocates and welfare groups about what was happening. I thought maybe, you know, peer pressure or public pressure. The public doesn't know. It was actually when I was in the program myself, my mother, who's not part of any animal welfare group, she's your average citizen who has a dog and loves her dog to death. She could not believe what I was going through, and she could not believe what were considered standard methods of training for a vet college. Most typical people assume, you know, well, vets love animals. Why would they intentionally harm an animal, even if it is for surgical training? And, you know, in human medicine, they use cadavers, and she just could not believe it. So my mom, in a way, I thought, well, if my mom's that shocked and disgusted and, you know, she was so upset by this, by just understanding what was the norm, then everyone else would be too. You know, all those future clients of mine that are bringing in their beloved companion animals would be just as disheartened. So I tried to educate the public in Toronto and welfare groups and had people say, well, if you agree that this is wrong, maybe can you write a letter to the dean saying that you heard about this and you think it's wrong and show your support for the humane methods. We're not saying we want our vets to graduate competent. We want them to graduate knowing what they're doing, but no one wants our vets to have to harm animals or kill animals at the expense of doing it. So I did that, and you know, we got responses. The dean would write back. The dean wrote these people back saying, you know, students are given the option and we're doing what we feel is best, but I didn't feel like we were getting anywhere. I came across, actually, Animal Alliance, a member and someone who does great work, Taylor Norman at the Animal Alliance. He contacted me, actually. He heard about what I was doing, and there were some students that were in high school that were interested. They were already starting to look into their future education, and they were high school students, but they were already concerned students, worried, am I going to have to harm, you know, or dissect, so to speak, kill live animals just to get my training? And they wanted to meet with me, so I met with them one night for coffee, and we went over everything and talked about, you know, what vet school was like and what it entails. That's how I became acquainted with Animal Alliance, and since then have gone to their annual Christmas party every year and just kept in touch with their great efforts on all their campaigns to help animals of all sorts, from protecting wildlife to protecting our companion animal pets and fostering animals through their project called Project Jesse. So that put me in touch with them. Through those years of collaborating with them, I've met Liz White, and Liz White is one of the co-founders of Animal Alliance. She's an amazing person. She inspires me to this day to day. And she basically contacted me and said, you know what, this is an important campaign. it warrants attention, let's do it. And so she basically joined with me and a few other sort of volunteers and members of the group, and we decided to make it our task that they start taking us more seriously. Obviously, you know, the little tactics I had done in the past weren't getting anywhere. And what bothered me, I guess, most were why, if I was a student, and so there's only four vet colleges in Canada. There's one in PEI, there's one in Ontario, there's one in Saskatchewan. They started, I guess, five. They started a new one in Calgary after I graduated, and then there's one in Quebec. But only the residents from the provinces in the area can apply to that college. So I could only apply to Ontario. What disheartened me was I found out that the Atlantic Veterinary College, which is the one in Prince Edward Island, they only offered an alternative course. So if I was a student and I just so happened to grow up in the Maritimes, I wouldn't have had to go through the hoops I did, and I only would have been given an ethical option. And my live surgical training only would have been on local, like you said, community spay-neuter programs through local humane society. So I thought, what's so different then about, other than, you know, where we live, about the Atlantic Veterinary College and me, and Ontario Veterinary College, for example? And it really came down to the faculty. So Animal Alliance joined with me, and we pulled our heads together, and we thought, we're going to keep tackling them and saying, why is, you know, a good proportion of this world only offering humane alternatives, and why are you sort of behind the times when it comes to conscientious decision making and conscientious sort of consumers, as in our clients wouldn't want this from us as their vets to have graduated. So we met with the dean, we met with the assistant dean, we kept over and over, Liz wrote articles and Liz contacted them. She did a lot of the sort of behind the scenes communications with the college and staying on top of them that we're not giving up and we're going to keep talking to you about this because it's serious and it's happening and we want it to change. Enough's enough. The public wants it to change. So you as the college who's producing our veterinarians should also want that to change. And I owe a lot of the behind the scenes work to Liz. I'm a busy small animal practitioner now working full time, actually working two jobs. I'm teaching at Sheridan College the part time as well. So Liz took a lot of the behind the scenes communication and was always responsible for organizing our meeting, and we all worked together and met with them, and that's when we achieved our success. So I can't be more thankful to the Animal Alliance, both for the money that the donators to that, it's all nonprofit. So, you know, they rely on financial donations from people, just concerned citizens, to get their money. All of that money funded this as well, because producing articles and, you know, meeting together and coming up with articles that we were going to maybe launch in the Guelph Mercury, their local paper, and the Toronto Star, all of that was necessary to achieve what we did. And although we didn't want to have to be, you know, give the ultimatum tactics, like if you don't now comply, we're going to publish this. Unfortunately, that was some of the driving force. It got us to where we needed to get. And it did cost a lot of money for that, taking away from their other campaigns. So I thank them dearly with my heart, because this is something that has obviously been very true to my heart, and something that I've seen as completely unnecessary, both financially to the college. The college will save thousands and thousands of dollars. That is the most expensive course in the whole curriculum at the vet college. And going to alternatives include not only ethical source cadavers, but there's models, there's plasticized specimens, watching videos, using inflated tubes filled with like a physiologic saline to mimic blood vessels. There's books and books in colleges across North America and the States. Tufts University has a willed body donation program where when a patient dies, just like us, you can sign a donor card saying you can donate my organs for research or you can donate my body for medical training. Well, Tufts program started years ago, something called the willed body donation program, so that when patients died in their hospital, the clients had the option of ticking off a box saying, yes, my pet can be donated so students can learn, thereby saving, again, a purpose-bred lab animal or a pound animal that maybe could have found its home instead. So there were so many options and alternatives there are and are even more so year to year, both across human medical schools for training and veterinary medical schools for training, that really the college just had to take the time to enforce them. And it obviously is a big task for the staff, that it's much easier for the faculty to just stick to what's the same and not do anything different, but this is going to save them a lot of money and give them not only them a better reputation in a forever changing time, but also benefit the students, because ethically, I have to argue, again, this is my personal opinion, but I have to argue that my students, that those ones that were crying lab after lab saying they wish they had chosen differently, there's no doubt in my mind that that emotional impact was affecting their education in a negative way, because I know myself, I don't know if I would have been able to complete that program on those live animals. I would have been so emotionally distraught that I don't know if I would have been able to come out with the level of skill that I feel I attained while I was there.
Mm-hmm. So obviously there's been some big news with regards to your campaign. Maybe you can just lay it out for our listeners. What are the changes that are going to be made now?
Sure. I guess the first step in the change was there's another fellow veterinarian who moved to Toronto, Dr. Anya. I have trouble pronouncing her last name, but she moved to Toronto and she heard about our campaign and met with us. And Anya is from another country. And when you come to Canada from another country, in certain countries, I should say, in Europe, their training isn't always considered by Ontario as equivalent. So they have to undergo a VSTEP program, which stands for Veterinary Skills Enhancement Program. And basically it takes all of the veterinarians from, you know, different countries, and they have to partake in this exam to get their license matched to an equivalent standard of what one, you know, graduating from Ontario would have. So Anya was also an ethical vet and didn't want to participate on live animals. And in the VSTEP program, they do the same thing. They use these beagles, lab-bred beagles, and the animals are anesthetized, and veterinarians like Anya would have to then spay these beagles to demonstrate that she is skilled, just like me and my other classmates, in order to pass so that she could get her license as approved as equivalent in Ontario. Well, Anya notified us about all the beagle use in VSTEP and the trouble she had at the Ontario Veterinary College just being a veterinarian in the VSTEP program. And she was a key player in fighting and fighting and fighting, and she was able to rescue her beagle. So we used her beagle, Rainbow. Rainbow got adopted out to a loving family in Kitchener and has a great home. And she was the first to, I guess, overcome that battle. So we used the VSTEP program and coupled it with our efforts to do the same thing in the third year program of just the DVM curriculum, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine curriculum. So Anya joined our team. We used that. And that was the first key, I guess, point. We talked to the OVC and we said, Animal Alliance already runs Project Jessie. And Project Jessie is basically a program where they'll take pets that need homes, place them in fosters, and find a loving home. So knowing that they had more than enough fosters across Ontario that would take these beagles until we found them loving homes, Animal Alliance approached the Ontario Veterinary College and said, don't kill those 40 beagles in August, early August, in July, we will take them. And we will put them in Project Jessie, sign them over to us, and we will find them loving homes. So you can still train these foreign vets, but we want the dogs. Don't just euthanize them for the sake of euthanizing them. And Liz met with the OVC on that one. And unfortunately, the first batch, you know, there was time delays, and we found out behind our back. We thought we were waiting to hear from them, and the first batch of beagles went through and were inadvertently euthanized. And that's what sort of flick the switch from being playing the nice guys and working with them to saying, look, take us seriously or we're going to really expose your campaign. We'll have a press release in 2 weeks, and this is the they even drafted a newspaper article about the Rainbow Campaign and said this is going to go out in the Toronto Star and in the Guelph Mercury next Friday if you don't take us more seriously and comply with us. And after sort of, I guess, the communications from both parties at that point on, that was our first huge success. Then the next batch of V-Step Beagles that were to be used in August were deemed accepted now to be adopted out through Project Jesse. And we had such a great success in recovering those beagles and finding them homes. And again, seeing the actual personal success stories, you know, knowing that families would say, I love my beagle, this is its new name, and knowing that these beagles were placed in homes was a huge success. So in that same month, August 2010, we said, great, if you're going to do it for this, there's no excuse now to not do it for the rest of the program. And it was the first week of September that Guelph advertised, you know what, there's been a last-minute change in curriculum. So for the students in the program this year, there was a last-minute change for them as well. They, the ones that thought they were using traditional lab-bred live animals, got a last-minute wake-up call that they were going to be now trained on alternative humane methods and get their live training in final year like the rest of us who do the alternative program do. So it was the greatest feeling or news of my life, I think, to hear that and know that these animals are not only being recovered, placed in loving homes, but the Ontario Veterinary College has realized that in times like this, join the majority of the vet colleges in North America, in the States, you know, programs like at the Atlantic Veterinary College, Tufts University, and be ahead of the times. Teach compassion, I guess, through good education. And I'm no doubt arguing I got great education at that college while doing it compassionately. So that was our huge success. The issue or issues that then later arose in that success, well, the dogs, like I mentioned, were obtained from pounds. So they were purchased from pounds, and they tried to purchase dogs that were deemed necessary for euthanasia, so you'd have some aggressive dogs and dogs that they felt wouldn't be adopted out. But there is a conflict of interest in doing that, because regardless of whether the pound has had it for 72 hours or they deem that it's aggressive and it would never be adopted anyway, they still needed X number of dogs each week from September right through to April, because there were a certain number of students that needed X number of dogs each week. So there is, again, you can argue, some conflict of interest, potential financial advantages, and all the unknowns, you know, where they were collecting. It wasn't just one pound. There were numerous pounds. Who were these pounds, and what were their ethics on, you know, depicting whether a dog is valid for this cause or not? So that's where the dogs came from. Now, some students felt good. The students performing traditional surgery on these live animals, that helped make them feel a little bit better, that some of these dogs were going to be euthanized anyway, so why not maximize, you know, their level of education if the dog was going to be euthanized anyway? Because when the program first came out years and years and years back, I have a lot of fellow colleagues that when they were in the traditional program, they were just lab beagles, and they used to recover them. So they would remove its spleen and then wake the dog up. And then on the next week, they'd remove its eye and then they'd wake it up. So in many ways, you could argue it was already a step ahead in terms of being more humane to that individual animal, although they were using more animals in total numbers. So that was one issue. The second issue is the sheep, though. However, there really was no ethical way around where are they going to get the sheep from, because the sheep were all lab bred. So they bred them at a research station called Ponsonby, and they calculated how many sheep they needed, and they'd have to start breeding them so that these lambs were of adequate size and ready for the semester start in September. And that's the problem that happened this year, is the Ontario Vet College didn't change their mind or didn't make their decision about the curriculum change until September. Well, by then, there was already live sheep at the college, on their doorstep that had been pre-bred and pre-calculated, you know, months prior. And now what were we going to do with these animals? Well, now they've changed the curriculum. Well, there's all these sheep here ready to be basically practiced on and euthanized that now aren't going to be. So that's been phase two of the campaign. And again, Liz has been pertinent in collaborating all of our sort of connections and welfare enthusiasts and people with farm sanctuaries. And the sheep, it was later decided that, well, now they can't be used for the program, so let's take these sheep and we'll just sell them at auction for slaughter. So we all heard this reply and thought, well, that's not complying with your new motto or your new curriculum change. The whole point was to help animals and not kill them and teach compassion. So shipping them to slaughter, yeah, the students might as well just practice on them if they're going to be euthanized. Why ship them somewhere else? And even the stress of that extra transport, that's like one more step out of the way for these live animals. So we had to negotiate a price. And again, thanks to all of the donors and supporters of Animal Alliance, that money went toward purchasing the sheep. And the sheep have been sent to some farm sanctuaries. The money is going toward castrating them, performing any routine sort of deworming and maintenance procedures on them. And I know there's several that are still looking for homes. So if there's any loving people out there that have appropriate facilities for sheep, they can certainly contact the Animal Alliance because we're still trying to find some of these sheep homes.
That's really great news. So I guess we don't really have too much time left, but I wanted to ask you, I guess, what's next? Are there other schools in Canada that you think they should be eliminating terminal surgeries from as well? What about this Animals for Research Act, the way that some of these schools are coming by the animals from pounds and these sorts of things? What's next for you? What's next for Animal Alliance of Canada?
Well, the Animal Alliance is, they're always up to something. I know they work on the cormorant issue in Ontario. And in terms of their roles in future education, I'm not sure. I guess that's actually a good point to look into. The other vet colleges in Canada, as far as I'm concerned, the one in Calgary, the new one in Calgary, and the one in Saskatchewan, they still are using live animals, and there still are teaching animals that are live, I guess, sort of subjects for students to practice on. I'm hoping this is going to be... This is why we want to congratulate the Ontario Veterinary College, not only for working with us, but also for setting a role in Canada and across the world, that they're being basically a role model for the profession, that in this day and age, people expect alternatives and people expect compassion, and there are scientifically proven alternatives out there. And not only can, again, there be more advantages than just that, it can save them money, students can practice repetition. There's so many advantages out there to both the public as well as these students. So thank you for being role models in this curriculum change. Now, if the Ontario Vet College and the Atlantic Vet College are the only two doing this, we hope that this will then encourage the faculty at these other schools, at the Western Veterinary College in Saskatchewan and the Calgary College and in St. Hyacinthe, Quebec, the faculty of medicine there, that they will all see this and make appropriate changes as well. I think it's, you know, like so many issues, everything from global awareness and environmental issues to animal issues, baby steps make big steps. You think back to years ago when people didn't even recycle. Well, it took someone starting, and then it took campaigns to get there, and one campaign leads to another. So I hope that that's going to be part of the shift in this just becoming the norm across all medical colleges, both for human training, human medical college training, as well as for veterinary student medical training.
Well, I hope you're right. And thank you very much for being on the show. It's really inspiring to see what changes you've made at the Ontario Veterinary College and where it's gone over the past 2 years. It's very, very, very inspiring.
Thank you, and thank you for having me. And I hope the students that are currently in the program now actually do see this as a benefit and don't see it as a negative change, because when you graduate as a veterinarian, you read a veterinarian's oath at your graduation, and in that oath is, you know, that you're going to willfully do your best to not, you know, impart any harm on animals. First, do no harm is sort of the quote we use in medicine. And I hope they feel proud that they can all say that, and that will have included in their training as well as when they graduate into the real world as working doctors of veterinary medicine.
Thank you so much again. And please let Liz White know as well that we really appreciate her work too.
I absolutely will. I hope to meet with Liz and the rest of our crew. And I think we're going to go out for a celebration, because this is certainly a big success. And maybe you've just started our next thought is, where are we going to go from here?
Well, enjoy your celebration. You've definitely earned it.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks again. That is our show for this week. Stay tuned for Raw Sugar with Charissa.